This is the Midlife Mischief Club podcast with John and Alvin.
Welcome, everybody, to the Midlife Mischief Club podcast. Today, we have Bill Bradley joining myself and Alvin. And Bill is a registered dietitian. He is an author, a co-author of an excellent Mediterranean recipe book, and is the founder of MediterraneanLiving.com. Bill is also my cousin. We're really happy you're joining us here today, Bill.
It's great to be here.
This is something we're really excited to talk to you about. Bill, you know, I've had a lot of interest in health and nutrition over the years. I know, Alvin, you're really interested in healthy eating as well.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to some daily tips on living longer.
Awesome. I'm ready to give them.
Bill, can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in interest in sort of diet, nutrition, and then why you're focused specifically on Mediterranean diet and Crete?
Sure. Yeah, as you know, John, when I was younger, I was overweight, and my mom was very overweight as well. And so I had a lot of interest in nutrition really from the time I was probably like 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. I personally wanted to not go down the same path that she had gone down. And I had really been taught a lot of habits by her not so much unhealthy eating, but a way of eating that wasn't going to be healthy for me in the long run and also wouldn't be good for my weight. And so I had been interested in it for a long time. And then I became a dietitian mostly because I actually wanted to help kids with weight loss. And when I got out of nutrition school, I had gained like 30 pounds in nutrition school, which was a very interesting thing, which I did lose. After that, I ended up working in a hospital. It was a one-year lifestyle modification program for people with heart disease. And the doctor there was using the Mediterranean diet. And so I started learning about it. And really, like the second I started learning about it, I realized that for myself, it really was the answer, because it wasn't like some crazy diet where I had to restrict foods or where it was something that I wouldn't be able to do for a long time.
Right.
And it was also something that, you know, is like steeped in tradition, and it's been around for thousands and thousands of years, and it's very well studied. And so I started learning about it mostly from books. And then I decided that I was going to go to the Mediterranean to really learn about it. So I lived on the island of Crete for a winter, basically. And I decided to go to Crete because traditionally they're known to be, if not, or some of the healthiest people, if not the healthiest people in the world. And so I went there, and what I learned right away within, like a week of being there, was that everything that I had learned in the books, not everything, but much of what I learned in the books, much of what I learned on the websites, was completely wrong and wasn't really the Mediterranean diet. And so as I learned more and I started talking to more people there and seeing and like going into the villages way up in the mountains and really talking to the people that were 90 years old or 100 years old and seeing the way that they ate was really eye-opening and fascinating and not what I had expected, as far as, there were definitely some big surprises in what the Mediterranean diet actually is.
And I think that's a great kind of segue into how do you describe it in terms of what you think the Mediterranean diet really is.
So first of all, as I said, it's a high-fat diet. They're eating upwards of 40 to 50% of their calories from fat, depending on where you are in the Mediterranean. And most of that fat is from extra virgin olive oil. So they are having recipes that have a cup of olive oil in it. Mm. And people are always like, how can I have that much olive oil and keep my weight off? The answer is that the rest of what's in like a stew that has a cup of olive oil is very low calorie, like beans and vegetables. And the fat actually helps fill you up so that you eat less. And so, you know, you can lose weight eating that kind of a high fat diet. So they eat a high fat diet, and our weight loss program is high fat. And then they eat lots and lots of vegetables, lots of fruit. And I mean, like I said, lots. You know, they'll have meals that are really vegetable based. And then the number one protein in the Mediterranean, or at least in these areas, are beans. Mm-hmm. Whereas the number one protein in here in America is meat. They're eating whole grains. They do eat bread almost every day, almost every meal. And then they eat meat, chicken, and fish on occasion, but the fish is ocean raised, the meat is grass fed, the chicken is herb fed. So it's a much healthier meat in general. And then they're drinking a lot of tea, some coffee, that wine, moonshine in the case of Crete. The tea has so many herbal benefits for you. They're eating like the traditional diet of the islands in Crete, or islands in the Mediterranean. They didn't have a choice of what else they were going to eat, because that's all they could eat was what was off the land. And it just so happens that almost everything that was on their land are the healthiest foods, which is why they're some of the healthiest people. Unfortunately, now they have more choice. And when you have choice, you know, you might pick the Twinkie over the, you know, treat. So one of the other things that is in almost all of the diets of the people in the blue zones, and especially in the Mediterranean, is fermented foods. And the gut microbiome is like so important for every part of your body, including your mental health and your heart health. You know, the combination of eating fermented foods like yogurt, they eat things like, you know, fermented pickles, fermented sauerkraut, that along with the variety of fruits and vegetables. You know, studies have shown that if you have like 20 different types of fruits and vegetables throughout a week, that it's really, really beneficial for your gut microbiome. And you know, so much of your health is surrounded around that.
That's helpful.
So potentially also why like the Mediterranean diet is so good in reducing the risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. So that's one thing. And the other thing I wanted to mention was the olive oil that we didn't quite cover. I just wanted to go a little bit into it.
Oh yeah, please.
And so olive oil, as many people know, a lot of the olive oil in the U.S. is fraudulent in some way, meaning that like sometimes when it says extra virgin, it's not actually extra virgin. Sometimes on occasion, I think, I don't know if they still are doing this, but there are cases where the olive oil isn't even olive oil and it's vegetable
oil.
It's
like a blend of something. Yeah.
Yeah. They add beta carotene to it and chlorophyll to make it seem like it's olive oil. And so you really have to know where your olive oil is coming from. And so we, you know, like when we were in Crete, we visited olive oil mills, and we found a really good olive oil that we like. And I don't have a connection to it, but what is important is that you really do get extra virgin olive oil and that it is super fresh. The more fresh, the better. And the way that you know if your olive oil is fresh is if you take a sip of it. I just happen to have a shot glass of olive oil right here. Before you sip it, the way to know that your olive oil is fresh, and this is a very important piece of your olive oil, is that when you sip it, in about 10 seconds, you should feel a burn, a peppery burn in your throat. And the thing, a lot of people think that the peppery burn means that the olive oil is bad. Actually, what that peppery burn means is that the olive oil is very, very good. And that burn, what causes that burn is a chemical called oleocanthal. And that oleocanthal is a very strong anti-inflammatory. And I spoke with this guy who was from the Athens, was like a school of pharmacy, I think it was. And he had found this text from 1,000 years ago, a Greek text. And it said that if you have a headache or a toothache, that you should take olive oil because it's such,
really?
It actually, the oleocanthal actually mimics the chemical that's in ibuprofen. So it's that's how strong of an anti-inflammatory is. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a sip, swallow it, and see if you feel a burn in your throat.
All right. Cheers.
Usually takes about 10 seconds. Oh, 2 teaspoons. Oh, mine is.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little bit of a spice.
Yeah.
If you are in the Mediterranean and you take a little cup of olive oil that they just pressed and it came from olives that were just picked within 24 hours, you're almost going to choke on it. It's so strong.
Wow.
And that's the kind of olive oil that they recommend that you have or recommended 1,000 years ago if you have a toothache.
Yeah.
Or a headache. So it is important that you eat more olive oil, but it's also important the type of olive oil that you eat. If you look at just a general Mediterranean cookbook or a Mediterranean website, they might use like in a recipe, maybe a tablespoon or two of extra virgin olive oil.
Right.
And they say, oh, they eat a lot of olive oil there. If you look at the real recipes from the Mediterranean, especially from the islands like Crete and Icaria, which is a blue zone, they eat a ton of olive oil, and their recipes have a cup of olive oil in them. Some
right.
of them have 2 cups of olive oil in them. So one thing is, I knew they had said it was a high fat diet, but I didn't know till I got there, like what they were talking about. Like the food is like dripping in olive oil, and it's like it's floating in olive oil. And the other, I had talked to this actually, the woman that I wrote the book with, I sent her into the villages in Crete. She's from Crete, and to ask people like what they were eating, the people that were 95 or more. And there was this one man that was eating a cup of olive oil every day. Like that's how much olive oil he was eating. And so he was drinking it. He was eating it. It was just like a huge part of his diet. And so that was one surprise. The other surprise was I knew that they drank wine. And
I was just going to ask about red wine.
Yeah. But they drink a lot of wine, and they drink it from the time that they're, maybe they actually put moonshine on babies' gums to help them with teething. So in some ways they're like, as a baby, they're having some alcohol.
Oh,
but definitely by like 5 years old, they're drinking alcohol. And, not a ton, but they're drinking small amounts with their meals. And right up until you'll see people that are 90 or 100 years old drinking wine and drinking moonshine. This is specifically in Crete and in other Greek islands. There's a lot of controversy about that. I certainly don't tell people that you need to drink alcohol because, you know, it's also different there. It's the difference is quite amazing. Like, you know, what like the way that they make it and the way that we get alcohol here. So there's a lot of controversy about that. The other thing, you know, I also, I knew that they ate a lot of fruits and vegetables. Had no idea how much. It's like the typical person in America eats about 2.5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And they're eating like 9 to 15 servings a day. And so,
oh my goodness,
you know, they will have fruit or vegetables for breakfast and snacks and lunches and dinners. And so it's very much a plant-based diet, but in a way that I didn't really understand till I went there. And I think the other thing is just how, like how many, like with the plant-based, like how many beans they eat and the amount of garlic and fresh herbs and how all of that, including the herbs, leads to a healthier body. And even what they drink is, you know, it leads to health. I'm not talking about alcohol. I'm talking more about the teas that they drink and the coffee and things like that.
And a lot of the, if our audience hasn't really looked at or read the Blue Zone book or seen the documentaries that are there, I highly recommend you do. Because a lot of these concepts that you're talking about are prevalent throughout each of these cultures where you're finding centenarians. You know, many years ago, I was on the paleo diet for many years, and that over indexes usually on the proteins and the fats, as well as a lot of fruits and vegetables as well. But just completely the opposite direction. And I think people go even like super crazy with that and push it to, you know, almost all carnivore kind of style of eating. And it's funny, after many years of doing that, I've kind of probably moved much more towards Mediterranean, where I'm trying to eat less meat. I'm, you know, the paleo diet does not include beans or grains. I include beans in my diet. And I've begun making my own sourdough bread. So I am including some grains, probably a little too much, but I'm, you know, but, I think I've kind of come back to more of a, I think, well-rounded, but healthier way of eating as opposed to where I was, you know, maybe 5 or 8 years ago, which was, you know, much more focused on the meat side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, there's some interesting studies and, you know, things that happen to you when like you're eating paleo or keto. Mm. And, you know, because people that are eating that way, a lot of the times they're taking a lot of processed foods out, which is also Mediterranean. You know, they do have a positive health effect because of it, but then also there can be more inflammation because of the meat. And, you know, there's things that can happen to people. And it's also not so much paleo, but like the keto diet, it's very hard to sustain over a long period of time.
You know, anyone can do anything for a short period of time. But when you're trying to maintain a lifestyle, something that you're really going to carry through for many, many years or potentially the rest of your life, it has to be sustainable.
You know, I ended up losing 50 pounds eating the Mediterranean diet, and I did it. It was slow. And, you know, we have a weight loss program that I created for people. And, you know, when they come in, there's all these like things that people have to kind of learn as they go in is like one that, you know, it's okay to eat fat because they've been trained that they shouldn't eat fat. And the second one is that they should be losing like 4 or 5 pounds a week. And that is unsustainable. That's, you know, your body has no time to catch up with something like that and ends up basically in panic mode. And so that's why, like, you know, I lost that weight probably like 10 years ago now. And I've been able to keep it off because I just keep eating. And, you know, it's funny because when you're eating Mediterranean, like you eat, it feels like you're eating more food. And you're like, I feel like I just like eat all day. Cause I, you know, this is what I do, but I don't have an issue with it anymore. And that's like a thing that so many people come in and it's kind of like a phew, like, oh, thank God. Like I can finally stop worrying about this and actually just enjoy my food, lose weight, feel better. And it seems to just really work for people in a way that a lot of other things that I had tried before just, you know, it didn't work, and it doesn't work for many other people.
I'm eager to hear about your book too, about, I'm sure elements of it are partly cookbook.
Yeah. Well, this particular book is, almost all cookbook because, basically what happened was when I went to Crete that first time, my goal was to collect 5 recipes a week for the whole time that I was there. In the last 2 weeks I was there, I had 5 recipes. Like it didn't work. And when I, you know, people in Crete say that if you have something you want, it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen the way you think. And so like 2 weeks before I was about to leave, I was like, I told this woman that I had met there, I was like, oh, I only got 5 recipes. She was American. And I said, oh, I got 5 recipes. And she goes, oh, I just heard from this other friend of mine that's Canadian. And she has a friend that's from Crete that wants to write a cookbook, but she doesn't have the resources to do it. I was like, let me meet that woman. And so that was Kula, who I co-wrote the book with. And she hand wrote 100 recipes in 2 weeks. And
oh my goodness.
And then we spent a year creating the, you know, making the recipe. Like I had to try every recipe. And then she actually came to America and spent 2 weeks with me working on the recipes we couldn't figure out. And so it's very much, it's like the very traditional recipes of her family from like 1950s, 1960. There's a menu in there that's like, this is the menu that they ate in 1960 when they were like really the healthiest people in the world and had the highest longevity rates in the world. And so it's much more of a recipe book than like, I don't write a lot in it. We want to do a new version of it, but there's not a lot of pictures in it. It's just a simple book, but we've sold, you know, thousands and thousands of copies.
Oh, congratulations. That's impressive.
That's great.
Thank you.
Can you clarify something? I'm very, very interested to know.
Sure.
So we love Italian food in this house. We also love Mediterranean food. I mean, we had Euros last night, which I think might qualify as Mediterranean. But I've got boys who are, they pound pasta. So I'd like to understand, please, like maybe not all Italian food will qualify as Mediterranean, but what, like, maybe to keep it simple, like what kinds of pasta would you say, what would make it Mediterranean? What would make it not Mediterranean?
Great question. First of all, Italian is Mediterranean.
That's what I was saying.
Okay. Yeah. Specifically, I mean, the healthier people in the Mediterranean tend to be from southern Italy, but they eat lots of pasta there. The difference is, like I talk about how, like, if you go to a restaurant in America, an Italian restaurant in America, it's going to be like 1/2 pound of pasta, 1/2 pound of meatballs, and then a little tiny iceberg lettuce salad and, you know, a big thing of white bread, basically.
Yeah.
And so if you're actually in Italy and like, not so much like a tourist part of Italy, but if you go into the villages in Italy, you're going to find pasta, just regular semolina pasta, the same, pretty much the same as what you're probably eating. So it's not necessarily whole grain. It can be a little bit more whole grain than ours. It's also non-GMO because it's in Europe. And so that's going to be another difference.
Yeah.
But what you're going to see is that there's huge bowls of cooked vegetables, huge bowls of a salad. There is going to be pasta. There's going to be meat, but there's just going to be completely, I mean, not always meat, but you know, there might be meatballs. It could be, there's so many different types of pasta. There's pesto pasta and garlic pasta. And so forget what I said about the meatballs, but sometimes they have the meatballs. But it's completely surrounded by vegetables. So it's that they're still eating pasta and they eat a lot of pasta, but the vegetables and the olive oil, and it's all fresh. The meat is grass fed. The vegetables are almost always organic, just naturally, because they're not using pesticides. Yeah,
they're grown in the garden.
They're grown in the garden. They're local. They're like the perfect vegetable. And then for dessert, they're eating fruit. And so they're getting all of these vegetables plus the pasta. And so, you know, with a teenager, if they're a teenage boy, for example, if he's like an athlete or very active, they need a lot of calories. And so, yes, they tend to need that kind of nutrition. But it's good if you can like add vegetables with it. The tomato sauce is a good vegetable. You know, it's actually a fruit, but won't get into that. But, you know, that's a good thing to add to it. But like when we make pasta, you know, we have a 4-year-old. We have a 4-year-old, and she loves pasta too. And kids, you know, just love pasta. And we try to always have broccoli and sauce with a lot of vegetables in it. You know, if they don't like vegetables, then you can make a sauce that, you know, blends it up and like blend up the vegetables with the tomatoes. But really, you know, you are eating Italian, but it's probably a little bit more of an Americanized Italian.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I have a friend who's an Italian chef from Northern Italy, and we've been to his house, and when he cooks, just as you described, there'll be multiple vegetables on the table and that are alongside the pasta of the evening.
Yeah. And I think the other thing you probably have seen with this chef, if he's from Italy, is that there's not a lot of talk when you're in the Mediterranean about foods that are bad for you or foods that are necessarily good for you. But they know, they will talk about all the time about this food has this that's good for me and this that's good for me. Like they'll go into the details of like every kind of food. Like they really know their nutrition. But it's a much more positive, they're coming from a positive base of like, this is what we celebrate. They're celebrating their food. We're here, we're like, oh, I can't eat that. And oh, this food's bad for me and I shouldn't eat that. And so it's a very different mindset as well. And it's really, you know, it's another thing that takes some learning to be able to say, oh, I'm going to eat this and I'm going to celebrate it. Even if it's like a food that's not as healthy, I'm just going to eat it and celebrate it because usually I'm eating really healthy food. And so, yeah, I'm going to have this cake right now. I'm going to enjoy it and celebrate it.
You know, can you speak a little bit about that in terms of the relationship of desserts and sweets maybe and how they fit in as well?
I think I can tell a story and it'll kind of open this up. So when I was in Crete the first time, actually when I was meeting Kula for the first time, we sat down in this restaurant that was kind of a touristy restaurant and we ordered baklava. And you know, I was like, oh, great. I'll order a baklava. She'll order a baklava. Each one was literally like this big and full of syrup and all kinds of stuff. That's not what you would get if you were in a village in the Mediterranean. Usually a sweet, and it's not every day, but a sweet, like a small sweet, it could be a little cookie. It could be baklava. It could be like a cannoli. You know, anything like that. So you will get in the afternoons, you know, sometimes a small dessert. It won't be as sweet as what you're going to get in a lot of American places. But they do have something like in Crete called spoon sweets, which is basically just fruit that's in it's usually like skins of fruit that's in a syrup. And so they might have that after the meal, but it's not an everyday thing. The thing that's eaten the most in the villages in the Mediterranean is fruit. And then you will have an occasional sweet. But even like if you think about what baklava is, if you're making it the traditional way, it's honey that's made from in Crete, it's these bees that pollinate thyme. So it's called thyme honey. And then, you know, it's nuts like pistachios walnuts. And then it's phyllo dough and then olive oil. And so it's actually, even though can be sweet, it's still pretty good for you.
You know, we're all, you know, north of 50 and, you know, our metabolism changes as we get older a little bit. And it can be more difficult to kind of keep the weight off. And you've said, you know, you've been able to maintain it with your way of eating. Can you give, you know, people some guidance as we're aging, how, you know, what you would recommend to sort of get started along this sort of lifestyle?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're starting the Mediterranean diet, I mean, really, it's as simple as find some recipes and start making it, or find a like really traditional Mediterranean restaurants, try eating there. You know, we're lucky we have two Moroccan restaurants owned by two brothers that are strangely a block away from each other in town. And but yeah, I think, you know, I would say the majority of the people that you know, get programs from us to do the weight loss. We have a weight loss program, Mediterranean Way program, a Mediterranean 30 program, and a membership program. And the majority of people are over 50. And when they come in, you know, they're often very discouraged. They've been on all these different types of diets to lose weight. And, you know, many of them are just like, I just didn't know that it was going to be as easy as this, that I can actually enjoy my food. And really, you know, for weight loss, the thing that we say to people is that the first thing you need to do is feel good. And then when you feel good, then you can worry about losing weight. You need to, you know, do the things throughout your day that make your brain feel good, that make your stomach feel good, your body. And, you know, so that's more than just food, but it's definitely like cutting out processed foods. If you have an issue with alcohol, it's making you tired, or, you know, anything that's bringing you down, like try to take that out. But then also, you know, the movement. There was an interesting, when I was on the island of Ikaria, and that island has the highest rate of people in the world to live over 100 years old. It's also a blue zone. It's a Greek island. And while I was there, there were these two podcasters from Australia, and they had this show about living to be over 100, or living to be 100. And so they had been interviewing all these people about what it was, all these people that lived to be 100, what it was that got them there. Nutrition was in the top 10. Exercise was in the top 10. You want to guess what number one was? The number one reason why people thought that they lived to be 100? The answer was purpose.
Ah, yeah.
Because you see people, and you see this all the time, like people retire and they don't have a purpose, and then suddenly they're sick and not doing well. And then you see other people, you know, that do have a purpose. Like my dad, you know, has a very strong purpose, and he's still doing things. He's building solar ovens and you know, wow. He's almost 90. And your dad had a very strong purpose as well. And so it's like, that is a huge piece of, you know, if you're over 50 and you feel purposeless, I would say get a purpose first. Find something that you're really excited about. And then do whatever you can to make yourself feel good. And I don't mean feel good like, oh, I'm going to eat this, you know, hot dog and French fries and feel good in the moment and then feel, you know, get indigestion afterwards and feel crappy, which I still do once in a while, of course. But but to do the things for the majority of your day that are the things that are really going to be healthy for you and make you feel good. And then
I love how this is also a prescription for kind of personal joy in addition to longevity.
Yeah. And you know, when you said about, I don't know exactly how you said it, but people in the Mediterranean on the islands are famous for being in their 90s and still making love on a very, you know, regular basis. And they're like very proud of it. And, you know, in Korea, you see old people riding motorcycles, like people in their 80s and 90s riding motorcycles and jumping into the Mediterranean Sea every day. And, you know, they're just, and they are respected in a way, you know, that is so important. They're respected as elders and they have a purpose because they're teaching and taking care of the younger people. And so,
right. New community connection, like they say in the Blue Zone. Yeah.
No. Yes,
that's right.
They don't lose that connection. And there's also a very strong sense of connection, in villages. You know, they have these regular big parties and we went to some in Crete and it's just in Korea, it's just amazing. Everybody's there. The entire village is there and they're like making food and it's still, this is another thing is, you know, and a lot of times in America, in the US, when we celebrate something, we got to have cake and ice cream and meat and, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers. And in a lot of the Mediterranean, their celebrations are pretty much the same food. They're still eating lots of vegetables. They might have more meat that day or something, but
sure.
They're not pulling out a cake and ice cream. You know, they might have a sweet, but they're still having all the vegetables and all the, you know, healthy grains and all of that they would have any other day.
But I imagine, Bill, when you were in Crete, that maybe you didn't own a car. And I'm a believer that when you're close to things, you're relying on your own feet to move around, you're seeing people. Anyway, I just think that's also part of health, right? So could you speak to that?
You know, I remember walking from the town that I was in, walking way up into the villages, and it's a normal thing there to do that. It's not, you know, to walk from a village to another village was a normal thing. And because they didn't have a lot of cars and roads and,
you're right. Like we have to go to the gym, you know, because we drive everywhere. We don't think to just go for a walk. For folks in these places, they just continue to walk well into their, you know, 80s, 90s and, you know, more.
When I was in Crete the first time, I was at this taverna way out in the country. And there was this man outside. He was lifting up these rather large stones. Like, I don't know if I could have lifted them. And he was moving them. And I looked at him and I was like, wow. And I actually said to the person that was serving me, I was like, that man, like, this was back when I was like 40. I was like, that man looks like he's about 50 and he's lifting rocks that I couldn't have lifted when I was 20. And the guy said, oh, that guy is 70.
Right.
and he's making a rock garden and he owns this whole taverna. And
holy cow.
So I saw pictures when I was in Korea from the 1920s because I met this photographer, had all these old pictures. And there were photos of these men that were lifting up, like by themselves, these just ridiculous boulders, like something that would take a machine to,
right,
to lift. And so I think, you know, I think another, there's so many pieces to it, but another huge piece is that they keep their muscle, you know, even into their 80s and 90s. And, you know, a huge part of why people here have issues when they're older is because they fall, but they're much right. less likely to fall because they still have their muscular structure. And can I give one plug for
one? Sure, knock yourself out. Yeah.
Okay. So we do have, you know, all these programs. You can check them out on MediterraneanLiving.com. But we also have a YouTube channel, and we have like a video on how to start the Mediterranean diet. We try to have videos every week, and we're trying to build that community as well. And so if you really want to learn a lot of what we talked about, the more of the specifics of it, then going to the YouTube channel, which is also called Mediterranean Living, is a really good place to start.
I'm about to take my kids to Japan. We're big Japanese food eaters. I'm curious to know about, in your opinion, I think there is some overlap with Mediterranean diet and Japanese cuisine. I'd like to hear, in what areas do you kind of maybe see the healthy side of Japanese food?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, like I said before, the really big difference is the amount of fat that they eat. They tend to eat quite a bit less fat, but they eat less processed foods. They eat fish. They eat vegetables.
A lot more seafood.
Yeah. A lot more seafood. They eat vegetables. They do drink, you know, not everybody, but, you know, they drink, they have like sake and things like that. And so, it's an interesting thing because, you know, people are always asking me about whole pasta or like wheat pasta and brown rice.
Yeah.
But in the Mediterranean, they don't eat whole wheat pasta. And in Japan, they don't eat brown rice generally. They're eating white rice. And so, you know, it's like instead of pasta, there's rice, although there is rice in the Mediterranean diet too. And the vegetables, very similar, using a lot of herbs, are very similar, different types of herbs, but still using a lot of that, drinking a lot of tea.
A lot of fermented food, a lot of pickled foods.
Fermented foods, a lot less meat and chicken. And yeah, it's very similar in a lot of ways. It's just the herbs and spices are different. You know, some of the things they use to flavor things are different. And the amount of fat is different, but I mean, that's why I think it's also a very healthy diet, because they're not eating a lot of processed foods and, you know, fake foods and things like that.
Right. Right. Very helpful.
Enjoy your trip.
Thank you so much. Thanks for everything. This was inspiring.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, very much so, Bill. Thank you for joining us. Diet and nutrition and wellness is something I've been really interested in for many years, and I've always appreciated your commitment to it, and love everything you're doing with Mediterranean Living. I think it's a great resource for people to learn how to begin, and then able to just carry on learning more recipes, learning more about the lifestyle. And we really appreciate you coming and talking with us, Bill. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Can you repeat your URL, Bill?
Yeah, it's MediterraneanLiving.com. And the YouTube channel is Mediterranean Living. We're also nice. On all the other things, and it's almost always Mediterranean Living. We're on Facebook and
Pinterest. The book title again?
Foods of Crete, Traditional Recipes from the Healthiest People in the World. You can find that on our website or Amazon. It's less expensive to buy it on our website.
A lot of great recipes, and a lot of the information we talked about today is in here as well. Bill, thanks so much, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it.
Bye. Have a great day.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Midlife Mischief Club podcast. Please be sure to subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. you can find show notes, links to our socials, and see what else is cooking on our website at midlifemischiefclub.com.